Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for this episode with Andrew Strassman. Remember, new shows are posted on Mondays and Thursdays. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes and YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show: CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Today, I spoke with the principal of Totem Asset Group, Andrew Strassman. We talked about how he got started in futures, and he shares with us a story on how Don Wilson helped him become a professional trader. He explains his trading process, how he goes about his trade execution, and gives us a recent trade example. We chatted about his real-time trading experiment called 40 In and 20 Out, and the networking group he started called Traders Fulcrum Networking. Last but not least, we discussed the comparison to central banks versus CTAs. So without further ado, let me take you right to the interview with Andrew. How did you get started in futures?
Well, I guess you'd have to go back to video games as a kid. I was really into, like, I had the Pac-Man fever. I had a bag. I think that was the genesis. I used to get magazines about Pac-Man patterns to memorize, and I would try to replicate it. Later on, after I'd finished my paper route, I'd go to the arcade, and I'd have to patiently wait my turn on the Donkey Kong machine. And I believe me, this will come around in a second. I know. So I'd have to wait my turn. And as I was waiting, I would see these older kids playing the game. And as I was observing them play, I figured out the rules of the game, and finally it would be my turn. And I would go ahead and I'd march along. Then I get to a level I'd never been at before, and I realized that I was better than the bigger kids. So I think really that was the beginning of my interest in trading, and in trading futures more specifically. But that was this kind of the genesis of that.
What was the moment where you were first introduced to futures?
Okay, so I think you'd have to go back to my video game roots. And back in 1983 at the Vancouver Computer Fair, I got the high score on a new video game launch. Everyone got to play this game once, and hundreds of kids participated. I won the Commodore VIC-20 computer. So that I got interested in programming at about 13 years old, and I really took a liken to that. Later on, I thought I was going to be an accountant, so I was going down the CPA route. My first gig out of school was being the assistant controller for Canada's largest introducing brokerage firm, and we were really heavy into to the futures market at this time. We used to clear at Stotler, if you remember, and then when Stotler blew up, we cleared LIT. So my first introduction to futures was at that company there.
You shared a story with me in a prior conversation on how Don Wilson helped you become a pro. Obviously, Don Wilson's probably one of the most respected guys in the futures industry. Can you share with us that story?
Sure. Well, when I was at that introducing brokerage firm in Vancouver, I got a $3,000 bonus, which got me about $2,200 in cash I put into a trading account. But the only thing I could trade at the time was remember the original TED spread, T-bill minus Eurodollars?
Yep.
I got long a two lot of those things around 35 basis points. It was kind of on the idea that it would behave like gold did. in the lead up to Gulf War One. And since I was working basically a 9-to-5, and since I was in Vancouver, that is to offset by 2 hours, I used a Wells Wilder volatility stop as my liquidation for this. And I rode that thing all the way up to about 180 basis points from about 35. So I had kind of an inkling of the, you know, trading experience heading into the thing. Much later on, I had learned the Turtle trading program, more or less. We had a fellow working for us at night, and he was best friends with one of the first generation Turtles. So he asked me if I could help him program something, but he couldn't tell me what it was and or how he knew or anything like that. So it was all very secretive. So I said, all right, well, this is going to be a challenge, but we can give it a whack. So as I started to help him develop the stuff, I got kind of a glimpse at the rule set that the original Turtles were using. And I said to myself, you're playing cards. Like, each time they take a bet, it looks more like an ante or a big blind with playing Texas Hold'em poker. So armed with that knowledge, I started to completely change the way I looked at markets. And this eventually led to some moderate successes. But it was Don Wilson who initially grub-staked me to turn pro from my initial humble successes. And I'll always be thankful for that.
Don's got good vision, doesn't he?
He sure does. Now, all right. I had crewed on his race boat for a few years, and I was telling him about some of the trading and things I was doing, and he said, why don't you just come do that for me? And I'm like, why don't I? So off we went.
Very cool. And talk to us about your trading process. Let's start with what type of trader you are. Are you scalping, swing trading, long-term trading? Talk to us about that.
So I'm a trend follower. I'm kind of a classic or pure trend trader. And what I do is I look for a consolidation and breakout. So that if there's two schools of thought on trend following, one is a breakout based for initiation, and one would be moving average based. I kind of lean to and prefer the breakout type methodology. Now, when you say like for the holding period, you take a look at a distribution of my holding periods, and losers can be 0 days. I just generally don't take home losers. So I have a whole bunch of losers to attest to that fact, but 0 to 3 days is about an average hold period. So the winners, you know, it's you got to ride them like Seabiscuit, and you got to force the market to get you out. So hopefully, you know, they extend out over, you know, 20 days would be great, or, you know, 3 months would be great. If you could hold on to it for upwards of several months, you know, and I'm thinking back to the crude and euro trade back in 2014 into 15, you know, those we held on to for, you know, many months. So it's the preponderance of trades don't work out. And those are very short, 0 to 3 to less than 10 days. But occasionally you'll catch a nugget. And those ones, you know, you like to hang on to.
What type of technical analysis tools are you using?
So I, you know, originally when I was coming up, I thought, you know, stochastics, MACD, all that kind of stuff was going to make me rich. It wasn't until I learned kind of the real, I call it real trading, but there's many ways to skin a cat. When I learned the trend methodologies, I kind of ditched most all of that. So I like to use chart structure and over some different time frames, but I like to use chart structure and average true ranges and moving averages. But ultimately, you know, what we're trying to do is identify asymmetric risk reward opportunities. And then you need to be in a position to take advantage of those opportunities. So one other thing I should note though, when you talk about even no matter how you get into the trade, there's two schools of thought. Do you increase your exposure as trades develop? You know, i.e. cannonballing, I think some guys might call it. Or do you put your entire position on initially, and then as the trade starts working, you start to take piecemeal profit along the way? And, you know, those both have different characteristics, but there's no perfect answer. I prefer to put the whole position on, and then as the trade develops out, start to take some profit.
All right, we'll go over a trade example here in just a moment. But before we do that, talk to us about what markets you are primarily focused on.
So right now I like to focus on the domestic large domestic futures is what I'm primarily focused on. I mean, I'll see opportunity in something like ethanol or milk or some of those other markets. And I mean, that stinks, but you know, if they have no open interest, then you don't want to be stuck in them. So I try to just stick with the large domestic guys. You know, that said, I've traded almost everything at some time or another. It's easier to focus on the guys with large open interest.
Yeah, you mentioned open interest. Let's stay there for a second. Do you have an amount of open interest that you require a market has before you even look at it?
That's a good question. I'm small enough that it doesn't really matter, because most all markets could take my level of business. You know, I'm not David Harding here. So that's not an issue. But when you see something like lumber, and I haven't looked for a while, but you know, less than 10,000 open interest, you know, there's a greater propensity to have a limit move. I think last time I looked, it's like lumber has a limit move on almost up to 30% of the days traded. So that's just, you know, that's not a position you really want to be in. It's great when you're on the right side, but you know, it's pretty miserable if you're stuck wrong footed. So if I had to put a number on it, I don't know, something like 30,000-50,000 open interest would be something that would be catch my eye.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Do you use any fundamental analysis?
No, zero.
Zero.
But zero. But I will tell you this much, after doing this for as long as I have, my positions start to tell you the story. Or more accurately, they tell you when the story is right. You know, for example, in 98, we had the big too much stuff and the deflationary spiral. Brent crude hit 995, gold traded down to 280. I mean, these are pretty preposterous levels when you look at them now, but you know, they happened, and you know, I was participating in some of those moves at the time. So if you step back and take a look at your positions, they will tell you the story. And you know, it is nice when you know the story, but even if you know the story, you need a timing mechanism to get you in at the right time. I'll say in quotes at the right time.
Bingo.
Yeah. So, you know, there's the right time and then there's every other time. And, you know, if you have better information, you know, it doesn't help if no one else knows it. You know, in fact, I argue it could hurt you if you knew it. One of the thought experiments I like to give people is, and I'll go back to the 98 crisis. If I told people the closing print in the S&P, I'll bet you they lose money. I'm telling you, I'm going to tell you the closing print, like it's January 1st. And as God is my witness, this is going to be December 31st closing print. And good luck. So, you know, it would happen, right? They would get levered up and they would start to get cold feet. What I didn't tell you was it was going to be down upwards of 25%-ish around October 15th of 98. And then they would close, you know, up, I don't know, it was up 5-10% on the year at the close of the year. But then you take a look and it was all eight stocks. It was just the great eight stocks that did all of the heavy lifting. So there's many ways to mess this up. You could have gotten over-levered early. You could have been shaken out in the October move. And there's just so many ways that you could have messed it up that I just guarantee you people would not make money, even if they knew the closing print. That's just this is a thought experiment we like to do.
Execution is everything. And speaking of execution, walk us through a trade example. Talk to us about how a recent trade is set up and how you executed it.
Well, okay. It has in the pure trend non-equity space that I live in. It's been pretty miserable for a pretty long time now. I think the last two really decent trades were the short crude move in 14 and short euro move. But I had this guy, he said to me, why would I invest in you when I can just get into this ETF, managed futures ETF? Specifically, he was looking at the WisdomTree managed futures fund. And I go, well, okay, fair point. Let's take a look. So I look at the prospectus. And if you remember the time, crude had traded up to about $140. It was hovering around 110-ish, 105 or so. And I take a look at the prospectus. And it says they do not get short energies. Just a blanket statement. We don't get short energies. And I say to the guy, I go, what if crude goes back down to $50? I mean, are you just not going to participate in that move? It doesn't make too much sense to me. So why would you put money into WisdomTree versus me? Well, I mean, you do what you want, but I just caveat emptor. And so crude fell, and it took out chart structure around $94, $95. I got short. I got stopped out. I got short again. I got stopped out. Now, the third time you think, well, this is preposterous. You know, it's the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. But it was actually the third trade getting short where it worked. And, you know, it's kind of the setup we look for is chart structure to be breached and then put in the protective stop and then trail the dynamic stop lower, protecting profits and force the market to get you out. So similar thing happened with the euro in or around that same time. Recent trades, well, there's been very few that you can really hang your hat on. Maybe natural gas was a good example of a nice up move, but that made kind of a reverse V-shaped recovery in very short order. So if you didn't tighten up your stops, then you left a lot on the table.
I'd like to dig into this a little bit more. Talk to us about the technical analysis setup and what you were looking for and what actually then forced you to execute the trades. I talk about this all the time. You know, as traders, we feel like we always see edges and we have to put our strategy in place to then force us to actually execute a trade. It prevents us from over trading and under trading. So could you walk us through what you needed to see on the chart specifically for you to say, you know what, I have to get in, you know, because going back to where you said you did it not once, not twice, but three times. So what specifically were you seeing that said, you know what, this is forcing me, I have to do this again?
So you should, a trader should always judge oneself by doing the right thing. And you need to force yourself to take every trade that you should. So when I'm running a breakout methodology, and we'll just say one could take a look at the X day high and the X day low. And you know, you might hear people refer to those as support and resistance levels. Well, I kind of turn that on its head. And to me, they're kind of like opportunity levels. So when you see like there's a few techniques, but you might be looking for minimum penetration of that previous high or that previous low. And kind of the moment you go through that, you want to take the trade. Now, I take trades I don't like all the time. You know, I don't particularly want to get long copper, and yet I have to get long copper. So once you get into the trade, you've already predefined how much you're going to risk on the trade. So you know what your protective stop level should be. You know how many contracts you should be trading for how many ever millions of dollars under management. And you just get in. Ultimately, getting in is really, really easy to do. It's like a good golf swing. It should come very naturally. Similarly, getting out at a loss should come very naturally. And you know, it's no fun taking losses, but you know, one way of thinking about it is each time I take a loss, it brings me that much closer to the good trade. So you've got to control the losses. That's like paramount to the whole thing. So initiation is I'm looking for minimum penetration through a significant high or low.
Gotcha. Let's move on and talk about 40 in and 20 out. That's your, you created this. It's the real-time trend trading experiment. Talk to us about that.
So this is an academic project that was born out of necessity, really. One of my family office investors, he had said to me, and we had agreed, it's very easy to compute alpha or excess return over a benchmark. So it's easy to compute that in the equity space. Let's take an example, if you bought $100,000 worth of Apple, and then immediately as you did that transaction, you sold $100,000 worth of Spiders. When you closed out your Apple position, let's say you made $100 on that trade, and your short position in Spiders lost $90. So your net gain would be $10. That would represent $10 of alpha being generated. If you made $100 and you lost $100, that would mean zero alpha. So it's really easy for us to compute that in the equity space. By contrast, it's very difficult in the CTA space because first you need to decide what your beta is. Now, our most common measurements would probably be the Barclays CTA index or the SocGen CTA index. But I think what has happened over the past 10 plus years or so, most of the large managers, and to be sure, these indices rely heavily on the efforts of some of the larger managers. Most of these managers have morphed from being a pure trend strategy, as a classic CTA is known by, to something more of a multi-strat. So they'll get into mean reversion, counter trend, risk parity, these sorts of things, just because I think mainly out of necessity on their end because of capacity constraints, but that's best left for another conversation. So if you're going to look back over like 30 or 40 years of return streams and say, how does this alternative CTA space fit into my portfolio? The last 10 years or so, it's really changed the calculus on this. You're not really getting what you used to get. And that's fine. And that's markets being more efficient and morphing probably. But what it also means is we no longer know what pure trend is doing because these large participants have deviated quite a bit. So we needed to find a way of measuring classic pure trend. So what we're doing with the 40 and 20 out project is really, really simple. We're doing a 40-day breakout, which there's no huge secret sauce here. This hasn't been optimized or anything. It's just a 40-day breakout. Some guys might choose a shorter time period. Some guys might choose a longer look-back window. So we're just doing a 40-day breakout, risking one 20-day average true range on the trade, which I guess we don't want to go into too much detail right now. We're risking 50 basis points of AUM on each trade. And as the trades develop out, it's liquidating with a trailing 20-day low in the case of a long, or a trailing 20-day high in the case of a short position. So it's about as simple as pie. It's just a very simple vanilla classic trend strategy. No add-ons, no take profits. And we monitor the trades every minute of every trading day. I've been running this for about 5 years now. And we publish the results in an effort to create a standardized beta for a CTA trend.
That's pretty cool. So how many people are participating in this?
So right now we've got about 100 people in the beta test. And initially, one of my family office investors, he made a nice endowment gift to his alma mater. And I had urged the dean of the business school to use their capital management program. And you like this because what they did was, you can't tell till you bet. So they had 400 and 500 level courses where they actually had live trading accounts for these kids. They gave them a pretty tight leash, but they said, all right, kid, let's put your hedging strategy or your spec strategy to work. And they basically funded them to trade live, which I don't know how many people do that, but that is a college course level. And I said to the dean of the business school over a pop, I said, hey, why don't you have the kids run this? And I gave them the scope of the project and everything. And ultimately they were complaining about like who would run it during spring break and Christmas break. And so I just said, okay, well, I'll tell you what, I'll build out a prototype and let you guys do it. And it's now 5 years later. I've still got this thing running in the background. But honestly, I think any manager worth their salt should be running these sorts of things anyway, just kind of baseline measurements, testing strats, that sort of thing. So it really was no problem for me to just kind of make this widely accessible in an effort to educate people and drum up interesting conversations with interesting people such as yourself.
And it's something else that you created from just starting out with just four traders to, yeah, I think now over 2,000 is the Traders Fulcrum Networking. Talk to us about that.
So a couple buddies, we'd meet for a pop around the holidays and we'd bring some charts and we'd talk markets. And we kind of had this kind of an annual thing. 1 year, you know, we just kind of invited a few more friends and so on and so on. Next thing you know, we got stuck with a $3,000 bar tab and we looked at each other and went, okay, well, we've got some new information here. We're on to something and we're idiots. So one of the fellows there said, hey, I'm good for a sponsorship. I'm good for $2,500. No questions asked. So he like got us out of that jam and we're like, awesome. Thank you very much. We said we should take this more seriously. So we started with meetups, if you will, more than 10 years ago, almost 10, 12, 15 years ago, with just 20 to 30 people and became 50 people. It became 100, 200 people per event. And we've grown now organically to over 2,000 members, averaging around 220, 250 people per event. Comes with, you know, corporate sponsorship and everything. So we're just really pleased to give back to the trading community. So, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about how we miss the old floor environment and the collegial atmosphere, something you just cannot get these days in trading with the screens and whatnot.
So do all of these meetings, events take place in Chicago?
Well, so yes, but we have had now two events. And we're working on our third annual New York-based event. So one of our board members, Caitlin DeNichols, she moved out to New York about a year ago. And I kind of said to her, listen, we started with four people. You can grow this organically the way we did. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we can do out there on the East Coast. We had about 150, 200 people at the last one. So we're starting to make inroads there too.
Very cool. How could people participate in this?
So they should go to tradersfulcrum.com. And that's a good place to start. And this is kind of, this has been by word of mouth only. So find someone, ask around, and we will get you on board.
Cool. Thank you, Andrew. I want to move on and talk about a comparison that you have between central banks and CTAs.
Yeah. So I have lunch this past summer with a new friend, Dmitry Alexeev, and he's got a product out there called AlphaBot, and it's basically a way to curate manager returns and run portfolio analyses. So he says to me, how's trading been going? And I'm like, well, the last few years has been pretty miserable, to be honest. And I'm tired of fighting the central banks who seem intent on mopping up any sort of excess volatility. One of the things I run is, and have been working on for, you know, a large part of my career, is defining the market regime that we're trading in. Because trend following tends to have chunky returns, very lumpy, and they tend to come in short periods of high cross-market correlation. So I'm able to, in a quantitative way, define the market environment that we're in. And I'm like, every time we seem to get going, you know, they click their heels and you know, the everything dies down and there's nothing to see here move along. And so I'm really tired of fighting these central banks. So he says, of course you are. I go, well, I know I am. But he goes, no, I have the data set. And he showed me this research paper that he put out. And in it, he overlaid the Barclays CTA performance drawdown chart. Then he overlaid on an inverted scale the growth of the Fed's balance sheet. And the two of them, you can just eyeball it. And the correlation is amazing. And it's just a sight to behold. So as I'm thumbing through his research paper, I go, I'll tell you, Dimitri, if you tack on to this, like a cumulative Fed plus ECB balance sheet, that would explain the next 3 years of woes that the space in general has been facing. So literally since quantitative easing kicked in what, 2009? So he goes, interesting. Well, he comes back at me the next week with the chart. And you can say with strong statistical evidence that the central bank's activities explain all of the S&P gains and all of the CTA woes. And the chart is pretty, pretty compelling with a P-score of 0.01, i.e. statistically significant. So it's just, I'll send you that chart. And
yeah, send me that chart, everybody. That's going to be in the post. So if you're listening to this on iTunes or YouTube, be sure to go to futuresradioshow.com and go to the post where this show is, and I'll put that chart in there. Last thing I want to talk about before we get into rapid fire, talk to us about your book.
Oh, well, this is another thing that kind of happened on accident, I guess. Every month, I'm a 4.7 exempt CTA. So I only deal with qualified eligible persons. So I really have to be careful about what I say and to whom I say it. And I don't really talk about my returns so much. But what I will do is to people who opt in to my monthly marketing and performance summary, I'll send out an essay. And I have enough of these essays now. And I've been told by some that they're pretty interesting. And I just kind of compiled them all into a book. And it's something, a family office prospect, his kid had made a book and put it on Amazon. And it was a book about Minecraft. And he sold like 20,000 copies. And this, you know, 10-year-old kid, he made like 20, 40 grand off of this. And I'm like, little son of a gun, I can make a book. So I just compiled them all. I put them in a book. And I don't know. It's just something I think it's interesting. I'm actually working on another book right now. So I give them to people I think are interesting. And that's about it. I will be sending your copy off shortly.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have not checked it out yet. And for anybody out there that does want to check it out, be sure to once again visit the post, and there will be a link in there to the book. Andrew, we got rapid fire questions next. Are you ready for those?
Ready as I'll ever be.
All right, everybody, our rapid fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Access the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. And now you can trade cryptocurrency spot and derivative markets side by side. For more information, please visit tradingtechnologies.com. Andrew, first question for you. What trader has influenced your life the most and why?
Clearly it's got to be Don Wilson. He grubstaked me to turn pro from my initial humble successes in the 90s. And apart from that, although I've only spoken with him once, Rich Dennis, who indirectly kind of had the turtle rules, and it's kind of the basis for the way I trade.
What was one of the hardest things that you've had to overcome in trading?
You know, they say disorientation caused by losses and destabilization caused by profits. Those are very real phenomena. It takes some time and experience to get comfortable being uncomfortable and maturity to control the highs. So I have to say that was probably one of the more difficult things. More recently, it's this battle in quotes with the central banks that I think myself and many in the CTA space and other traders are finding challenging. So we'll have to wait for the fullness of time to see how that plays out.
How has your trading process evolved over the years?
Generally speaking, my trading process remains the same, which is to say, observe, orientate, decide, and act. And that's something called the OODA loop, and we could go on for a long time about that. But all strategies need rules to predetermine the amount of risk you're going to take on, rules to initiate, rules to liquidate, and rules to exit the winners. And to that end, the process kind of remains the same. That's the process.
I think we'll follow that up on a TV show episode.
Okay.
That sounds pretty interesting.
Sure.
What is one attribute that you believe every trader should have?
Discipline.
What's your favorite book about trading?
Well, the first book they tell you to read when I was on the Board of Trade floor was Reminiscences of a Stock Operator. And to be sure, that is a timeless classic. Market Wizards is another. They're both pretty amazing. But I'm going to go with Fooled by Randomness, Tlaib's earlier book, which I think was actually better, and also Fortune's Formula.
What's the best piece of advice you've received about trading?
The markets are maximally perverse.
What's your favorite movie about trading?
Got to go with Trading Places. Wall Street was pretty good, but Trading Places.
If you could go back in time and give the younger you a piece of advice, what would it be?
Well, I had a hunch. I was up my first $1 million trading, and I was just going to liquidate everything and go hike the Annapurnas. If I could go back, do it. Just do it. Your hunch was correct. Now, having said that, I wouldn't now know what I know. And there's a lot of utility in that. But I should have just gone and bought a round of shots in the Himalayas.
If you had an elevator pitch me your edge in trading, what would it be?
So basically, I'm long the things that are going up and short the things that are going down. The idea is have the biggest bets on the best trades at the right time. So vary the unit sizing.
Last question for today. What's your favorite thing to do when you're not trading?
Well, I would play hockey if I could. My knee is pretty much shot now, so I would definitely want to pick up a stick and puck and fire it around. But these days, I seem to be carting my kids around to their sports more often than not.
Where can people find you on social media, preferably Twitter, and give us a website to check out?
So the number 40 in 20 out is the Twitter handle for the real-time trading experiment. And then for our networking group, it's Traders Fulcrum, all one word, is the Twitter handle, I guess. And same thing, 40in20out.com and tradersfulcrum.com. And my CTA for qualified eligible persons is totemasset.com.
Andrew, this was awesome. Thank you so much for joining me on Futures Radio Show.
Hey, it's a real pleasure. Next time we'll have to have a pop, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.